Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in, latest Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on Wednesday, December 5th. I am Doug Kazarian. Coming up, John Murray and Mike Clay, full NFL coverage as we head to Week 14. We'll also recap Week 13, but we'll also talk some college. Obviously, a big weekend last weekend with conference championships. John Murray will break it down as we look ahead to the college football playoff. Also, a little Heisman voting update. Crazy move here. We now have Kyler Murray as the betting favorite ahead of Tua Tagovailoa. There's a little bit of a twist in there. Murray will explain that. Some early sharp bets for the bowl game action that Murray will share. So tons to get through. Recapping Week 13. Looking ahead to Week 14. We do have one college football game in the FBS this weekend. That is Army-Navy, courtesy of Phil Steele, 12 straight unders in that game. So maybe you want to jump on. We've talked about streaks. What do you do with a streak? So that's something to consider in that one. But one pod this week, back to two pods next week, but tons of NFL coverage and the latest in the baby bankroll bonanza.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Tons to get through with Mr. Director John Murray. How are you, my man?
Doing good, guys. How you doing this morning?
Well, we're doing great. Only one pod this week, but we have a lot to sift through. Tons going on last weekend, not just with the NFL, which we will get to in a little bit, including the baby bankroll bonanza update. Not a ton of movement, but definitely some drama in that. But let's start with the college football playoff. And what I anticipated would be the most controversial decision, and I don't know if I'm 100% accurate, but at times it felt like, given there were, in essence, four teams for two spots, and a lot of people out there referencing the Vegas flavor to this in terms of saying that Georgia would be favored by all those teams besides Clemson and Alabama.
Yeah, I think it's two separate conversations. If you're saying which four teams deserve to be in it based on what they did on the field, I think they did get their correct four. If you're saying we want the four best teams, then you need to have Georgia in there. Georgia is definitely one of the four best teams in college football this season, but they didn't earn it the way that Notre Dame and Oklahoma did. Oklahoma winning the Big 12, avenging their only loss, Notre Dame going undefeated. I don't really see how you can have a problem with the four that they selected this year.
So this is where it gets very interesting for me and extremely nuanced and splitting hairs, but I think it's an important discussion to have as we evolve as a sports fan base and incorporate betting more and more into the everyday usage. So this goes back to my theory, or my thought process rather, on the word upset. Vegas and sports betting cultures have such a territorial approach to the word upset, and that they mean it like they have complete ownership of it. And I disagree. I think in the NCAA tournament, if a 10 seed beats a 7 seed, even though the 10 seed was like a 2-point favorite, you can still accurately say it was an upset. Now, it wasn't a betting upset, but it was a seeding upset. Now, I, as someone who's very immersed in sports betting, always specify whether I'm on SportsCenter, radio, whatever, because I think there's a way to be just more accurate, right? To be just better. But I think if someone says upset, I just think it's wrong and completely just, it's like insufferable at times how the sports betting community just mocks that person because they use the betting market as the only variable and only metric. And I just don't think that's 100% accurate.
Well, I don't worry too much about the sports betting community mocking people. That that's like, to me, that's about 90% of what the sports betting community does. So that doesn't really bother me too much. I know what you're saying, though. It's kind of two separate conversations. And like I said, Georgia, they are one of the four best teams in the country in terms of our power rating numbers here in Las Vegas. I think Georgia against Clemson as a 2-3 game would have been an awesome game. I think it would have been better than Clemson-Notre Dame. That's my personal opinion. But I don't know how you can say that Georgia, with their two losses, deserves to be in that game more than a Notre Dame team that went 12-0. I just don't see that.
Well, okay, so the parallel I want to make from like the word upset and whatever to this is that, you know, look, I wrote a column on Friday in saying that an odds maker should be on the college football playoff committee. I'm not saying it should be the voice. It should be a voice. And if you're going to use athletic directors who were not former coaches or players or media members or even Condoleezza Rice, then why not have another intelligent person who has their own power ratings and hear them out? Not, again, not the only voice. But that's sort of my thing is when we use the power ratings, it's not the voice of God. Like, I can't say Georgia is one of the four best teams. Now, I can think they are, but when there was so much outcry by using Vegas as, like, again, the voice of God, like, that's insane. Like, their best win is against Florida or Kentucky, right? So they lost to LSU. So I don't even care if it's the two losses. Like, if they had lost to Clemson and Alabama, I would be much more willing to consider them. And if they had a win at LSU. But they didn't. So if their two losses were the two best teams, like I said, hypothetically Clemson. So it's not about two losses instead of one loss. It's about in the bylaws of the committee, the unequivocally component. I just think Vegas presence in this discussion got way too carried away when college football by nature is just kind of messy and inefficient and there's not a balanced schedule and all the other things that, you know, make college football beautiful, right? It's always been a sort of eye test, and to me, I would say Georgia on a neutral field, if I had to pick teams, so to speak, and play against one another, that is, but I'm not, I wouldn't bet my life on it that they're better than Oklahoma. I mean, you can't argue that and with 100% sort of confidence.
No, it's not 100%. I think no matter what the committee does, no matter which four teams they picked, or even if we went to eight teams in the future, there's always going to be people out there complaining about it, saying how this team or that team got robbed, saying how this team or that team didn't deserve to get in. You know, again, I don't see how anybody could really make a case that the committee messed this up that badly.
I agree.
I think the four teams they chose are perfectly logical. Both of the matchups made perfect sense in terms of the seeding. I don't know. I mean, the people that are outraged by this committee's selections are the people that just have to be outraged over everything. I just don't see any reason to complain that much this year. I think the committee did a perfectly fine job.
Agreed. And Oklahoma was seated behind Georgia's, Ohio State. Ohio State was sixth, not fifth. And it's not just because they had one loss that was a blowout to Purdue. I believe it was 29 points was the margin. But they also looked bad in other games, like going to multiple overtimes with Maryland. Remember that year that Florida State was undefeated but kept trailing at halftime? They weren't one or two. Like, there were one-loss teams ahead of that undefeated FSU team in the power in the seedings, because how you look in wins can hurt you just as much as losses. So that's why Ohio State had no chance. They were sixth because of how badly they looked in other games, not just the game at Purdue. But either way, my focal point of this conversation was more to address sort of the presence that Vegas and the odds-making and the power ratings has in the sports sort of discussions. And, you know, they said – a lot of people arguing were like treating it like Georgia's better and like how it's a fact just because Vegas's power ratings had it higher. And I think we got a little too carried away there.
Well, I don't think it's a fact. All I'm here to say is that if Georgia played Oklahoma next week, Georgia would be favored. Now, that
Correct.
Doesn't necessarily mean that they would win.
Right.
But they'd be favored in that game. But at the same time, I don't know how you could be outraged that Oklahoma and Notre Dame with their resumes got in over Georgia. I think that's very unfair to those two teams. Notre Dame did everything they could, literally. They won every game on their schedule. So I think they definitely deserve a seat at the table.
Right, and in fairness to Notre Dame, like, they did play Stanford, USC, not knowing that those teams would have down years. Like,
and Florida State. Yeah, Notre Dame's schedule broke a lot easier than people thought. There's no question about that. And I think Notre Dame would have gone undefeated playing Georgia's schedule? Absolutely not. But the fact of the matter is that they ran the table, and I think they deserve a spot in the playoff. Oklahoma, I've said before, I think the Big 12 is the hardest conference in America to go undefeated in, the way it's set up with 9 conference games, with playing the second best team in the conference and the conference championship game. So for them to go 12-1, given the schedule they had, I think is very impressive. I don't know how their defense is going to stop Alabama even one time in the Orange Bowl, but I do think Oklahoma deserves a spot in this college football playoff.
Yeah, my favorite bet in that game right now will be Bama team total over. I'm very excited to bet that. But we'll table that discussion momentarily. Let's talk more about Oklahoma. Their quarterback, the star QB, Kyler Murray. Breaking news on Monday, for the first time all season, Tua Tagovailoa was not the betting favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. He opened the season as the favorite, stayed that way. And look, I know you guys in Nevada Gaming mandated that you guys take it down about a month ago per rules, but it was really interesting to see the offshore market move this. I mean, look, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, he was minus 1,000 was Tua, going into last weekend in the neighborhood of minus 400 or 500, and now Kyler Murray, a slight favorite after conference championship weekend.
Well, Tua was a favorite for a very long time. You're right about that, but we actually opened a couple of running backs, Bryce Love and Jonathan Taylor, as the favorites. And
right, but in the offseason, not when the season started.
Oh, right. No, that's true. And one conversation Ed Sammons and I had this week was, we'll never favor running backs in the Heisman again. It's hard to imagine a running back winning the Heisman Trophy the way college football is going right now. I think that there's been a lot of people hedging their Tua positions by betting on Kyler Murray in the offshore books, and I think that's helped to move the number down. That would be my guess. Obviously, I don't know that for a fact, but like, if you had a big position on Tua, wouldn't you, if you thought there was a chance he could lose, wouldn't you hedge some money on Kyler? There's no way a third player could possibly win, so you could certainly position yourself to lock in a good profit by doing that.
Especially after what happened last weekend. Now, I maintain that Tua got hurt in the first quarter, limping around a little bit, and then obviously left the game later with another injury, and then Murray put up exceptional stats again, and he's obviously been a dynamic player. I personally would not fault anyone for voting for Murray or Tua. I certainly think it's a coin flip in this regard. Now, I would lean personally Tua because of how flawless he was. I think he played a much, you know, he played more difficult defenses. I think the Big 12 was laughable at times. I mean, dude's running wide open, but Murray was also asked to do much more than Tua, but Tua was literally flawless the first 8 games of the year, 25 touchdowns, no picks. His stats were not as gaudy because he didn't play the fourth quarters. And again, I remember earlier this year, I argued that like Murray could play quarterback for Alabama and the line wouldn't change. So I've been pro Murray, pro Tua all season. I think just splitting hairs in a very difficult decision, I would pick Tua, but I certainly couldn't fault anyone for picking Murray.
You know, I don't think it would be fair to Tua because his teams were ahead by so much. You already referenced it. He didn't really have to play in the fourth quarter, a lot of the second half. Kyler Murray had to stay in there because Oklahoma's defense was so bad that they needed him and the Sooners offense to score 40 or 50 points a game to win. If Alabama had needed to score 50 or 60 points every week just to squeak by, Tua could have done that. Tua could have stayed in there for the full 4 quarters and got it done. I'm not trying to take away anything from Murray. I know he had an exceptional year. But I think it's unfair to just put their two statistics next to each other and say, okay, this guy's better, when Tua's team was winning by so much, he didn't need to do what Kyler Murray did. I think Tua could have done everything Kyler Murray did, if not more, had he needed to. Now, having said that, I am rooting for Kyler Murray to win the Heisman because the book here at the Superbook at the Westgate takes a big loss if Tua does secure the Heisman.
How bad?
It's pretty bad. It's our worst case scenario. So absolutely, I'll be rooting for Kyler on Saturday, but I do think Tua earned it. My question is, how many people voted for Tua weeks ago or several weeks ago and didn't even bother to watch the end of the season? I mean, don't a lot of these Heisman guys submit their ballots early?
Well, that was what was so remarkable. I read, I think 10 or 11% of the Heisman votes had been submitted before the weekend, so by Friday night or whatever, which I think is completely irresponsible. But
ridiculous. You can't wait a few more days and see the season end before you do it. You can't wait like 3 days and see the conference championship games.
Well, how about this,
crazy,
Murray? You know, that report, that interview with Tom Rinaldi to his dad surfaced about, you know, the belt and all that stuff that got some buzz, negative buzz for Tua's dad. Well, what if a report Saturday morning or even Sunday morning surfaced about Tua doing something that cast him in a negative light. There's a,
right.
I don't know, morality code. There's something in the Heisman terminology that, remember A.J. McCarron referenced, I believe, the year Jameis Winston or Johnny Manziel won. I can't remember which one. But there is a clause in there that speaks to representing the Heisman Foundation, all that. What if something had surfaced that really was very negative for Tua? I think all those people who turned in their vote would have some egg on their face and feel really bad. Now, I was a Wooden Award voter back in the day when I worked in Vegas and was covering college basketball with the Running Rebs a bunch. And trust me, there was a time where I almost forgot to submit mine online because I waited to the last day. So I understand that fear, but you can do it Sunday night or whatever. I mean, it's not – because like Monday noon, I think, is the deadline, something like that. But, yeah, I just think it's irresponsible, and you never know what could transpire.
Well, if you've got the Big 12 championship game and the SEC championship game on the same Saturday and both of the quarterbacks are playing, you really can't wait until after those games are over to determine who you think is the Heisman winner. I think it's pretty irresponsible to not see the entire season play out before you say, okay, this guy was the best player this year.
I agree. And in a way, it's refreshing. In a small way, it is refreshing because I do believe it should be a body of work award. And I do think Tua, again, was flawless the first eight games, played great, faced, obviously, a Georgia defense that Kyler Murray never had to face that quality. But with that being said, you still wait. I mean, I mocked David Gettleman of the Giants for waiting 5 months but not five more minutes to turn in a Saquon Barkley pick. You don't know what trade's going to be come across your desk. Just exercise some patience and some responsibility in doing that. But it'll be interesting how it all shakes out. I do think that you're right. Murray being favored is probably just more action coming in. I'm fascinated by this, and it's good to see that with such a landslide a month ago that we're actually going to have some suspense entering this weekend. But good for those Superbook bettors because they got you guys in a bind.
Pay that man his money.
They do. They got us sweating a little bit. Well, actually, I'm actually going to watch the Heisman Trophy ceremony this season, which I don't think I've done the last few years. Last year was such a foregone conclusion that Baker Mayfield was going to win.
Yeah.
There wasn't really much point to watch. And they make you sit through like that hour-long thing before they announce it with 2 minutes left in the show. So I didn't watch, but this year I'll keep an eye on it for sure.
By the way, for those wondering, the last time a school had back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners that wasn't Archie Griffin, right? Who's the same
guy? I think I know.
All right, who is it?
Wasn't it Leinart and Bush at USC?
Correct, but that was obviously voided.
Oh, right. So that doesn't count.
So I believe it was the 1940s. I think Army had back-to-back, and if not, it was Yale in the early 1900s.
Doc Blanchard, maybe, at Army? He was very good. He was a very good player.
So it's very rare that different guys win it from the same school. And like we said, in 2005, I believe it was, when Reggie Bush had his taken away.
And it's pretty exceptional, too. You're talking about two guys, not just from the same school, that played the same position, just one after the other. That says Mayfield and Murray are great players, obviously, but a lot of the credit needs to go to Lincoln Riley. That says a lot about his offensive system where it's like you lose a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, you plug in the next quarterback, he wins the Heisman Trophy. That says quite a bit about Lincoln Riley's offense. It also says a lot about the defensive quality in the Big 12.
Well, I was going to say that too.
That's another conversation for another time.
What about the fact that both these guys are transfers too?
Yeah, that's a great point too. But it says a lot about Lincoln Riley, and I think he's a guy that a lot of NFL teams certainly should be looking at. As the NFL shifts more and more to offensive-minded football and the passing game, Lincoln Riley should be at the top of a lot of teams' wish lists for head coach.
1945, Doc Blanchard wins the MVP as a fullback for Army. And 1946, Glenn Davis, halfback.
Yeah.
Glenn Davis, not the same guy who played for the Astros and whose rookie card I spent way too much for as a kid when my brother swindled me, but that's a different story. The first baseman with a solid stash.
Between brothers, we don't want to air that out. But, yeah, Doc Blanchard is the only one I remember, yeah.
Larry Kelly and Clint Frank for Yale went back-to-back in 1936 and 37. Larry Kelly's position, end. That was it, end. I don't know if that's offense, defense. I'm assuming it's offense.
I'd say football has evolved a little bit since then.
Right. Back then, there were lower odds for halfbacks and running backs and ends. I think nowadays you're going to juice the running backs in terms of the future.
We don't see too many ends in the Heisman Trophy race. It's mostly these quarterbacks now.
What's your biggest liability on Murray or Tua?
Tua's the biggest.
I know, but like what single ticket?
Oh, a single ticket? We have one guy, I think I may have mentioned it on the show. A guy came in late June, and he bet $2,200 on Tua at 12-1.
So say that again. That was 12-1 for $2,200?
Yeah, and remember, if you think back that far, Nick Saban was still pretending like he didn't know which quarterback he was going to go with between Tua and Hurts, and that was why Tua's odds had drifted up a little bit. And then there was another guy that got down at 10-1, and then there were some really bigger bets. Guys were laying prices once the money shifted to where he was favored. We had a guy bet, I think, 27,000 to win 15. A guy bet about almost 30,000 at -180. I don't remember the exact figures, but there's some pretty big bets in there on Tua for sure.
I love it. Yeah. Well, there'll be some serious action now. You've already taken some college football sharp bets. Anything you can pass along? We're going to do a regular college football podcast next week.
Yeah.
But anything? Any of those early action?
Yeah, there's a little bit of stuff in there from some players I respect. Now it's not on the playoff games. It's not on the two college football playoff games yet, but there's been some money come in on Auburn against Purdue in the Music City Bowl. I'm not sure how you feel about that game, but
I like Purdue.
There was some money on Arkansas State. They were a pick'em against Nevada. That's the Arizona Bowl. That game actually starts at 2:30 on the day of the college football playoff.
Ooh.
So only the gamblers will be watching that
appetizer.
Game at 5:00. Yeah. And then Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech catching 6 points against Cincinnati. That's in the Military Bowl. That's on New Year's Eve. You know, Virginia Tech, they beat UVA, and then they scheduled a game against Marshall to get bowl eligible. They won that game, too. That's the only reason they continued their long streak of playing in a bowl game. And we saw a Sharp group take the points on them against Cincinnati.
Yeah, that was a blowout for Virginia Tech to get bowl eligible, and I believe there was terrible weather in that game, so it was an interesting watch in and of itself.
That was one of our bigger decisions of the day, actually, on Saturday. We had a guy make a really big bet on Marshall, and we won quite a bit on the Hokies in that game. That was a really good game for us.
Double-digit favorites in the college football playoff, both Clemson and Alabama. First time we've seen that in both semifinal games in the brief history of the playoff. No sharp action yet.
No, and I think one thing we've already seen is a lot of people taking the two underdogs on the money line. You're going to see a lot of flyers on those two dog money lines the way you do when the Super Bowl has a really big favorite. The public loves to take that underdog on the money line. So I won't be surprised to see both those money lines come down as we get closer to December 29th. And there might be some good value out there on both Alabama and Clemson on the money line if you have the stomach for it.
So why are recreational players in Vegas like betting on the money line now before, on Notre Dame? Like,
it's very few tickets.
Okay.
I would say maybe it's something as simple as a guy was in town this weekend and he won't be back here for that game.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
It could be something that simple, but as we get closer to the game, certainly way more tickets are going to come in. And I know the way people bet these games, there's going to be a lot of money on both dogs on the money line for sure. Now, there's going to be a lot of parlays with both the two favorites, too. And I think people will do money line parlays of NFL games and other things that weekend. I know there's a big UFC event that Saturday, too, where they'll take a lot of the favorites on the money line and they'll end the parlays with Alabama and Clemson money line. So it's not like we're not going to have any money on those two teams either.
Right.
But in the straight bets, it's going to be mostly straight bets on Oklahoma and Notre Dame money line.
Copy. That makes sense. And real quick, just to put a bow, there was a big boxing match Saturday night with all this going on, Championship Saturday. How did you guys do, and what was a draw, surprising draw?
Yeah, I booked it to need Deontay Wilder, and I bet Wilder for myself. I thought I was so sure he was going to win. Sometimes you get away with things in life, DK. Tyson Fury should have won that fight. Tyson Fury, I thought, was well ahead on the cards. Deontay Wilder, with a brutal knockout of Fury in the 12th round, I thought for sure the fight was over. Fury resurrected from the dead. I don't know how he got off the mat. It was incredible. Great fight. I think we got away with one here. I got away with one here. I think Fury should have won. We opened up the rematch, Fury -120. They haven't announced a date or location yet, but certainly Fury, in my opinion at least, deserved to win. And that's from the perspective of somebody that was rooting for Deontay Wilder. But it was a great fight, and it's good to see heavyweight boxing get back into the conversation.
No doubt. All right, let's get to the NFL action from this past week and look ahead. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. Holidays are near, gentlemen. Treat yourself or a loved one to a brand new suit. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. Suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. Just watch as the compliments roll in. This week, listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Behind the Bets at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Behind the Bets for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Back here on the Behind the Bets podcast, and an eventful week, to say the least. Week 13 and a couple headlines. First and foremost, start of the weekend was a Saints upset as road favorites in Dallas. Now, look, Dallas was a chic pick as the dog, but the Saints had covered 9 straight games, and the Cowboys get the cover, or win outright, I should say, in a strange game, ugly play, just a sort of, I felt like, just like hungover watching the game.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that any defense could ever hold the New Orleans Saints to 10 points in a 60-minute football game. Like, that, to me, is, like, remarkable that could ever happen. It was a terrific performance from the Dallas defense. Dallas has a lot of young stud players on that defense all of a sudden. If they can just be smart enough to stick with Ezekiel Elliott on the ground offensively, there's really no reason why the Cowboys couldn't win a couple games in January.
I said, tweeted this, and, you know, there was some hate, but there was also some Cowboys fans, like, laughing. But, like, all this does is set up more heartbreak for the Cowboys in the playoffs, right? Like, with Dak Prescott, yeah. Do you trust him to make a run?
No, I don't. That's why I said they need to be smart enough to stick with the ball on the ground. Keep feeding Ezekiel Elliott. He's always asking to be fed, right? Keep giving him the ball. Let him win. Let their defense win. It's not that I don't trust Dak Prescott as much. I don't trust Jason Garrett as much.
Ooh.
I think he can't help himself. He can't help get in his own way. I think he's the big problem there. But certainly Dallas is in the driver's seat to win the NFC East. They'd probably play, I don't know, we'll say Carolina, Seattle, Minnesota, somebody like that in the first round. And then they'd be a considerable underdog in the second round. They'd have to go on the road to New Orleans or L.A. But you got to like their chances right now of winning that division.
You don't believe in Mark Sanchez?
The Redskins are completely finished, obviously. The NFC East, the Eagles play Dallas on Sunday afternoon, one of the marquee games of this weekend. And if Dallas wins that game, I think they would basically wrap up the division. But if Philadelphia can win, it would certainly make it much more interesting. The Redskins are what they are every year. They're going to finish 7-9, not make the playoffs, and pick like 15th in the draft, and then they'll just do the same thing again next season. It's what they do every year.
I threw this out there the other night. Is losing Sean McVay the worst thing that's happened in Dan Snyder's tenure?
That was pretty bad. That was up there. I mean, they had Kyle Shanahan, too. I know Shanahan doesn't get nearly as much credit as McVay, and McVay certainly deserves all the praise. I'm not saying that, but Kyle Shanahan was the OC under Mike Shanahan, and they had that terrific team in 2012, and Griffin won the Rookie of the Year. And then in 2013, Griffin took a step back off the ACL injury. But their offense was actually still really good. They had the worst defense in the NFL. They had the 32nd ranked defense in terms of points allowed in that season. And they decided to fire the two Shanahans and retain the defensive coordinator, Jim Haslett.
What?
It was just another in a series of terrific moves by Snyder. Yeah, their offense was, I'm not saying it was good. I'm not saying that. Griffin clearly took a step back that year, but They had the worst defense in the NFL in terms of points per game allowed, and they retained the defensive coordinator and fired Kyle Shanahan. So another terrific move by the Redskins.
Where would you rank letting McVay and Shanahan go, the younger Shanahan, compared to the swinging gate?
That was pretty bad. there's so many. I always thought the dumbest thing the Redskins have done in the Snyder era, and it's such a long list. Like, you could debate it for hours, but they had a team where they in 2001 where they started 0-5, and they managed to win 8 of their last 11 games. They finished 8-8. Marty Schottenheimer was the coach, and their defense was playing really well. LeVar Arrington was one of the best defensive players in the league that season. He was very young at the time. In the offseason, they decided to fire Marty Schottenheimer, and they hired Steve Spurrier. Oh. And they just had two disastrous years under Spurrier. And I always thought that was, to me, the worst decision. But there's so many of them that you could debate it forever. Trading a second-round draft pick to the Eagles for Donovan McNabb needs to be at the top of the list, because, like, if a team is willing to trade you their starting quarterback within the division, that should be a red flag for you. But apparently the Redskins didn't see it that way.
We could go on and on.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, we could talk about this forever. there's no point. We don't have enough time on this show for all the funniest thing about the Dan Snyder tenure is he bought the team, I want to say, in 98 for about $800 million, and he's done everything wrong in the last 20 years. He's been about as disastrous as an owner could ever be, and right now he could probably flip them for about $5 billion.
Well, yeah, that's just the NFL.
So he's going to be just fine, but no, the Redskins are just a complete mess. They're out of the race here, and the NFC East is going to come down to Philadelphia and Dallas for sure.
No, I know. I was just poking fun. Although the Redskins are 6-6, and who knows, stranger things have happened if the Eagles get the outright win and whatever. I'm not going to make a case for it, but it was. I just wanted to poke you and see what your take was on the Skins
totally
on Monday night. So we did have a coaching change, second one of the year following Hugh Jackson, our another regular here on the pod, if you will, who gets mentioned at least, Mike McCarthy. After losing as, I believe, a 13.5-point favorite at home to Arizona in cold weather. I mean, just had all the makings of a Packers convincing win, right? Oh, no.
You would think.
They lose outright. And Mason Crosby, hey, maybe he makes a field goal, and maybe they win in overtime, right? Missed it as time expired. So McCarthy fired right after the game, 13 years in Green Bay. I was actually doing SportsCenter at the time, and I did the breaking news. Brought in Adam Schefter, gave us the news, gave us some context, talking about the relationship between Aaron Rodgers and McCarthy. And then I was lucky enough to have on set next to me were Jeff Saturday, who played a year with the Packers and McCarthy, and then Ryan Clark, who faced the Packers in, I believe, the 2011 Super Bowl with the Steelers. And Clark says, every time the Packers, I see them this season, I recognize all the plays, not because I've been studying them this year hardcore, it's because I did for 2 weeks prepping for that Super Bowl, and literally nothing has changed in terms of offensive ingenuity. And I thought that was a fascinating comment.
Well, it says a lot, because I can't imagine that if you play the Rams in 2026, Sean McVay is going to be running the same plays that he's running in 2018. It says a lot about Mike McCarthy, and it looked like Aaron Rodgers and that team were just kind of going through the motions. I think they were ready for a coaching change. I don't think Joe Philbin is the guy that's going to fix it. I thought he was one of the worst coaches in the league when he was with Miami.
Yep.
But I think that certainly it's the right thing for Green Bay to do, and they've only got so many years left of Aaron Rodgers' prime. For them to miss the playoffs 2 years in a row with Aaron Rodgers as their starting quarterback is ridiculous. I know last season was mostly because he got hurt, so there's an excuse there, but what's their excuse this season to be one of the worst teams in their division when they have Aaron Rodgers as their starting quarterback is ridiculous.
Yeah, 0-6 on the road as well. Never a sign of a strong team. And I just think it's funny how people are like, well, he won a Super Bowl. They owed him. They don't owe any. You pay someone millions and millions of dollars. Like, let's not forget the transactional relationship. It goes back to when Kobe. They're like, well, they owed Kobe that max deal at the end. Like, no, they paid him $304 million. Now,
they don't owe these guys anything.
You could say they owe him because of the branding. He helped the franchise and having the salary cap limit. That's fine. Give him an executive position and pay him $10 million a year after he's retired for 20 years like other franchises have done. I'm okay with that, saying we owe him for the brand value, whatever, because we were limited because he was certainly underpaid, quote unquote, during the times that he was an MVP candidate because of the salary cap, right? Obviously, he was like LeBron's worth hundreds of millions of dollars, right? Like, I get all that. But you don't have to, like, you know, handcuff the franchise moving forward because of something he did a handful of years ago. Like, you don't owe Mike McCarthy. You could say Mike McCarthy owed you wins, which he did not deliver, especially on Sunday as a 2-touchdown favorite.
Who would have thought after the Packers won that Super Bowl that you referenced over the Steelers, I think that was in January of 2011,
yeah,
that the Packers would never get back to the Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, and they had a bunch of good young players at that time. To think that that group would never get back to a Super Bowl, they probably should have. They should have won that NFC Championship game against the Seahawks a few years ago.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that they never did, and somebody's got to be the scapegoat for that. And I'll tell you right now, it's not going to be Aaron Rodgers. So it had to be Mike McCarthy, and the Packers did the right thing. The Packers should be a very appealing job in the offseason. I think their roster is terrible, but they have the guy that I still think is the best player in the league, a quarterback. So there's got to be a lot of offensive-minded head coaches that would love a chance to come in there and work with Aaron Rodgers.
I wonder how Terry Bradshaw's taking the news, because he thinks they got rid of the wrong guy, in theory.
Yeah, they should have traded Rodgers at the deadline and built around McCarthy. That's call that plan B.
So recap of some other point spread outcomes. Chiefs, also a big favorite, close to 2 touchdowns. Entered the weekend 8-2-1 against the spread. That was tops in the NFL. But the Raiders actually cut the deficit to 3 late in the fourth, and they had the worst record against the spread at 3-8 this year. But they get the cover as about 14-point dogs. And other double-digit favorites did cover. We saw that with the Rams, despite Todd Gurley's efforts to fall down inside the 5. I mean, are you kidding me with this? Now he's just getting unnecessary. Now it's trolling.
Well, you know what I think it was? He got so much praise for doing it against the Rams that he thought he was doing the right thing again. But with the Lions having a timeout and the 2-minute warning, just walk into the end zone, man. Just score. I wish he had, too. It would have given Detroit a little bit more time for the backdoor cover. The books right. Certainly need the Lions there, but I think Gurley got a little carried away there. It was certainly the right move was for him to just simply score the touchdown and go up by 2 touchdowns there.
Well, remember back in the video game days, there was actually that would be a move you played in video games because you were confident you could score, right, with like a couple plays, but you wanted to leave less time. So that's what you would do in the video game world, but not the actual football world.
No. I thought that was a little bit much. I understand what he was trying to do or what he thought he was trying to do, but I thought that was a little silly. We had a pretty good day on Sunday overall, though. We can't complain too much. Certainly, you already mentioned it, but the Raiders covering the Chiefs was very good for us. Unfortunately, the Texans beating my Browns was bad for me and was certainly bad for the house. That was not what
How's
we
Mr. Musburger taking that one?
I didn't have a chance to see Mr. Musburger yesterday, but I'm sure I'll hear about it today when I have to come up with a pick. Very impressive from Houston. I've been critical of Houston. I thought they were very fortunate to win a lot of these games. But the last 2 weeks, they really handled business, took care of Tennessee and Cleveland very easily. And you got to give them credit for that. And they're on a 9-game winning streak. They certainly deserve credit for that.
It's remarkable. Also, in that, 9 straight.
No, it's amazing. In that same division, Indianapolis-Jacksonville was one of the big winners for us on Sunday morning. All the money was on Indianapolis. And I just mentioned how crazy it is that Dallas held New Orleans to 10 points. It's probably even more crazy that Jacksonville shut out Indianapolis. The way the Colts' offense was playing, Jacksonville was playing terrible football. They actually shut out the Colts.
Truly remarkable. 6-0 final. And there was – look, this had all the makings of the Sharps being on the dog and winning, because just a few weeks prior, Colts were 3-point home favorites to Jacksonville. Fast forward to a few weeks later, they're -4 at Jacksonville. Now, I know Bortles was not playing, but I imagine that had no effect on the point spread. So,
no.
Just the fact that Jacksonville had lost 7 straight, 0-5-2 against the number during that 7-game skid, but it had all the makings of like, nah, that doesn't feel right.
No, it didn't. And I'll give you a game we did very well on was the Baltimore-Atlanta game.
Oh,
a lot of money,
yeah.
On everybody bet Atlanta. Now, you saw that favorite actually shift over to Atlanta. I think Atlanta closed -2.5, -120. And there was clearly some big money on the Falcons all over town and in the global markets. Baltimore winning that game outright, that was a huge win for us in the morning session.
Sorry to interrupt, but MGM, I think, took like a $300,000 bet
on
the Ravens in that game.
Yeah, that was...
Excuse me, Falcons.
On the Falcons, right. Yeah, I think I saw a tweet about that. That was certainly one of our bigger decisions of the morning session. That was a very welcome result here at the book. You know what we could have really used was the Jets to beat the Titans. The Jets led that entire game. And what we saw in the third and fourth quarters, Todd Bowles once again going overly conservative, trying to sit on a lead, and once again costing his team a victory. Yeah, I was very complimentary of Bowles last season, but it's just completely gotten away from him this year. And I think the Jets should be looking to move on in the offseason from the Todd Bowles era.
Yeah, you and I were both fans of his last year.
Yeah, I was.
But I don't know, man. I think they number one should be about their quarterback development. I mean, that's what matters most right now. And whatever coach, staff gives them the best chance at Sam Darnold's evolution and development, that's all that matters. That's top concern.
It has to be. And from what I've seen, I don't think that Bowles is that guy. I don't think they have that guy on their staff right now.
All right, my man. That was a good recap. Anything else jumping out? That we'll talk about the Dolphins game with that line movement. I was a little early on it. And
yeah. Boy, the Bills almost gave me another heart attack on Sunday, man. I mean, I got that Bills under wins bet. What a play by Josh Allen, spinning away from Cameron Wake. He left the throw a little short, but all Charles Clay had to do was just walk up to the 1 yard line and catch it there and then just roll into the end zone.
Wide open.
Clay has got to come up with that football. That was a hell of a play, really, to get it out there. And I thought Allen looked pretty good on Sunday. He ran for about 135 yards, made some impressive throws. You can really see some strides there.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to win all of a sudden.
I know. I don't think I'm going to win that under six bet. I mean, under six wins bet. I think maybe I'll get a push because Buffalo's got some really winnable games down the stretch, and their defense is playing really well. Allen looks like, I'd say right now, the second best of that group of rookie quarterbacks behind Baker Mayfield. So certainly Buffalo is a team that's headed in the right direction.
Question. Minnesota at Seattle, back-to-back roadies for the Vikes after losing in Foxborough, really manhandled by the Patriots. Where do you think that Monday night line closes? Currently 3.5.
Yeah, and right now we're seeing pretty split action on it. I think it'll probably go down to some variation of 3. I don't see it going to 4. Right now we've got Minnesota plus 3.5, minus 120. Very critical game in the AFC wildcard playoff race. I don't think that they could actually end up tied because the Vikings have a tie from earlier in the season against Green Bay. So it won't actually determine a tiebreaker, but it's a big swing game in terms of these teams' records. And it's a game where the book here, we're really going to want to see Seattle win, because I know I've mentioned this a few times, but we have a guy that bet $240,000 on the Vikings to make it to the postseason. And if Seattle wins this game, Minnesota could definitely be in trouble. You have to think Chicago is going to win the NFC North. And if Minnesota were to lose on Monday night, they'd be behind a few other teams in that wild card race.
Well, I asked because I'm going to have a pick on that game in the Bonanza, so I wanted to get your expert opinion before you knew it was incorporating the Bonanza. Speaking of which, let's get to it.
I know why you're asking me questions like that, DK. Come on, how long have I known you? If you ask me which way that it looks like the number is going to move, I think I can piece together the rest of the puzzle.
I'm serving our listeners. Let's get to the baby bankroll bonanza, but first a word from one of our sponsors. What do you have on your holiday to-do list? How many errands do you have to run? As you know, the holidays are the busiest time of the year, especially at the post office. That's why we use Stamps.com. It saves us so much time during the hectic holiday season. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Post Office right to your desktop. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Then the mail carrier picks it up. No trips to the post office required. It couldn't be easier. Print postage any day, anytime. Stamps.com is always open. Stamps.com not only saves you time, it saves you money. Stamps.com helps you print the right amount of postage every time. Never overpay again. And with Stamps.com, you get discounts on postage. You can't even get at the post office. With all the time and money you'll save, Stamps.com is the best gift you can give yourself this holiday season. I use Stamps.com because I have to send a bunch of stuff out all the time. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a four-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in bets. That's Stamps.com. Enter bets.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Not a lot of blood last week, but the Russian was cut. Prince of Props did suffer his first loss. Tried to go against what I suggested would be a high-scoring game on Sunday night, and to no avail.
Yeah, he already gave me a pick for this Sunday. I think it's for the Sunday night game. But yeah, he was defeated, certainly. I think what really killed it was that last touchdown drive by Pittsburgh at the end of the first half. They got the ball back with not a whole lot of time left. They went about 90 yards through a touchdown pass. What a comeback, though, for the Chargers. Oh,
yeah, we didn't really talk about it in the first part of the show. That was one of the best games of the weekend. I glossed over it. But nice comeback for the Chargers. Pittsburgh had been on a roll. The reason I like the Steelers is they open up the offense and go beatdown mode every time off a loss. Six straight covers off a loss dating back to last year and in typically high-scoring games, which it ended up being. Now, I hedged out of my bet at halftime, took the under because I thought the Steelers would go conservative, which they did. Scoreless third quarter, only scored one more touchdown the rest of the way. But I did not anticipate the Chargers getting a punt return for a touchdown and also the offense all of a sudden waking up.
And how many times do we see that in the modern NFL where teams go conservative and it ends up costing them a game? I mean, how many times do these coaches need to learn that lesson?
It's crazy. And Warren Sharp did a fantastic job breaking down play calling in the first half versus the second half. Runs on first down in the second half are just drive killers, and that's all the Steelers did. That's why they had such short possessions. And he also profiled a linebacker covering Keenan Allen, which shockingly did not prove successful for Pittsburgh.
I doubt it. And, you know, if your offense is moving the ball at will, just keep right on scoring. Like, why? I don't understand why teams, when their offenses are playing so effective, the Steelers' offense was moving the ball up and down the field in that first half. Why didn't they just keep doing exactly what they were doing?
It's silly.
Cost themselves a win.
Right, and you
game.
Dictate
it
the clock.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you don't have to go tempo, but you can still call pass plays.
Of course, and it's exactly what the other team wants you to do, believe me. The Chargers didn't want the Steelers to just keep on doing what they were doing, keep on throwing the ball all over the field. They wanted them to go conservative. They did, and it was a big reason why the Chargers won that game.
So in terms of the bonanza, I lost the juice in that game, so that was $2,000 on each side, so it was $200. And then I took a middle shot with the Dolphins, and I lost. I won the hedge, but it lost the original bet because I took 5.5 when we taped the pod, but it actually closed 3.5, so I won the pick in my column and because it landed 4, but I lost some juice. So I lost around $1,200. I'll do the math, but how about yourself? You lost the Prince of Props. Was it -110?
I believe, it was a team total. It wouldn't have been anything other than -110. And then my Brownies, they let me down big time.
For a nickel. So, all right.
How many times can I go to the well with the Cleveland Browns?
Well, I think you're going to keep doing it. That's just my hunch. But
I'd like to. I really like that team. I don't really like it this week, though, against Carolina too much. That game is just a toss-up.
Panthers just losing, three straight? I think they're favoring all three, too, so... They've had
some bad loss. That was a bad loss to Tampa Bay. It was a bad loss the week before at home against Seattle. That was a game that really could determine their playoff positioning.
Yeah,
if they make the playoffs.
Cost them in that Seahawks game. So, all right, man, I guess I'm on the tee first, right?
Yeah, go right ahead.
All right, I'm not too worried about the Saints against the Cowboys. That was a bad blip on the radar. I'm going to take a position on New Orleans, probably play back and live. We'll see how it goes. I'm going to do $3,000 on New Orleans -8.
New Orleans -8. Yeah, New Orleans, 3 extra days to prepare for this game. Tampa Bay, that was a pretty good win for Tampa Bay on Sunday.
Yeah, they played okay. I thought Cam played poorly, but give the Bucs some credit, especially on D, which we don't normally say.
Yeah, that's true. I can't argue with that. I'll go. I've only got two plays this week. I got my play, and then I got the play from the Prince trying to redeem himself. I actually like the Philadelphia Eagles getting 3.5 in Dallas. That'll be probably the most heavily bet game of the day, until certainly the Sunday night game, of course. That Sunday night game is a really premier matchup. That'll be the most bet game of the week by far. But I'll take Philadelphia plus 3.5 for a nickel. My own picks, my own column.
All right, so the Sunday night game is the Rams at Chicago. It looks like Trubisky will play, L.A. Yeah. laying 3. I thought that was a short number, all things considered, but, you know.
There's been money's been showing on the Bears, because we did open it a little bit higher, and money's been showing on the Bears. And we've seen this a lot this year. I know when the Patriots played at Chicago about a month and a half ago, the money really showed on Chicago. The Patriots only closed like a 1.5-point favorite in that game.
Yeah, no Gronk in that one as well.
Yeah, the Bears have they've been a team that they've gotten the public the money a lot this season, and I thought Kai's team foolishly beat them on Sunday.
Yep.
Oh, I knew
lowered
it was
their draft choice even more. Well, it's just how I feel, Kai. I mean, the Giants, they don't have a quarterback of the future, and they're just lowering their draft choice every week. And they're a 3.5-point favorite on Sunday against the Redskins, now that the Redskins are down to whoever it is they're trotting out there at quarterback.
Oof.
Yeah, it's a bittersweet win, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
I'm just afraid that the Giants are going to finish 6-10 and pick 12th in the draft, and this whole season will be wasted.
No, I know, man.
I'm with you there, Murray. Let's my next pick. I'm going to take the under 49.5. I don't think the innovation is coming for Green Bay overnight, and Green Bay's hosting Atlanta. I'll take the Falcons offense that has been having some difficulty of late. I'll take that one, that game under 49.5 for a dime.
Yeah, I agree with you about the innovation from Green Bay. I don't think Joe Philbin is capable of any innovation based on what I saw of him in Miami. I will be interested to see how Aaron Rodgers, like his body language, looks this week. I think he's got the weight of the world off his shoulders now that Mike McCarthy is gone. So I do expect him to play much better. But I don't see the great play calling coming out of Philbin. I always thought he was one of the 3 or 4 worst coaches in the league when he was with the Dolphins.
Well, I also just thought he was a knucklehead when it came to the Richie Incognito just press conferences. There was a very tone deaf. I just look whether how you feel about that situation. Regardless, there's just a manual. You just go up there, say the right things, and get off the podium. But he was kind of just stupid and brain dead on some comments, and like I just think that crosses over to the rest of your job. And he didn't strike me as the sharpest tack.
Philbin was one of those guys who only got a head coaching job because he happened to be the offensive coordinator of a team with a all-time great quarterback. Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback of those Packers teams. He was the OC for. Mike McCoy was similar to that. Mike McCoy got the head coaching job of the Chargers because he just happened to be the OC of the Denver Broncos that 2013 season when Manning was, or 2012, one of those 2 years where Manning was lighting up the world as the Broncos quarterback. McCoy left and it made no difference. Manning just kept lighting up the world. So you got to be careful hiring an offensive coordinator thinking he's a genius when the reality is he just happens to be the offensive coordinator of a team with an all-time great QB.
Well said. Someone
doesn't always translate.
Marty Mordenweg was a similar benefactor over his years of coaching.
Yeah, and we've seen Charlie Weiss and Josh McDaniels both leave the Patriots organization to be head coaches elsewhere and do so with varying degrees of success. And we've seen the Patriots with Belichick and Brady continue to flourish on offense. So you've got to be cautious. I'm not saying I don't think McDaniels is a good offensive coordinator at all, but it's hard to tell how good he is when he's got Belichick and Brady there.
Well said. Well said. All right, what do you got from the Prince?
The Prince, going to the Sunday night affair. Big game we just referenced between the Rams and the Bears. He wants to go over 5 sacks at even money for a dime. I like the fact that it's even money. Can't lose any juice on this one. So it'll be 1,000 to win 1,000 over 5 sacks. Hopefully our guy Khalil Mack
combined
get after. It's 5 sacks for the game.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, 2 pretty good defensive players out there, Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald. Those guys might be the 2 best defensive players in the NFL. So hopefully the Prince is prophetic on this one.
I don't know how I feel about that one. I loved the first one to the point where I talked about it on SportsCenter with Colt McCoy. I did not like it, obviously, last week with the Steelers, and I'm lukewarm. There's got to be a better prop out there. Unfortunately, we have Mike Clay coming up on the podcast, the real Prince of Props. Like a man.
You don't think the Prince is doing his homework?
He's a guy.
You don't think he's just shooting that out to me? Like, oh, here you go.
Well, he's a prince. We got the king of props coming up later, Mike Clay.
Ooh.
Wow. All right. I see how it is.
Let's see what the prince has moving forward. He's got plenty of weeks to show me, much like Joe Philbin has time to show the Packers. The prince has time.
Let me get one more Joe Philbin comment in there, DK. I think the worst thing for the Packers would be if Joe Philbin goes in there and does a fantastic job and they somehow talk themselves into extending him and making him the full-time head coach. Yeah, I've said before, I think that's the worst thing the Browns could do is win a bunch of games and decide, oh, we're going to keep Greg Williams.
Like Bortles shining last year, taking the Jags to the AFC title.
Exactly.
Shockingly, he's not the starting quarterback anymore.
Kansas City had that happen a few years ago where I think they fired Todd Haley and they gave Romeo Crennel 3 games as the interim coach and they went 2-1 and they decided to keep him for a full season. Terrible decision. So Green Bay, I'm sure they'd like to see Philbin do better than McCarthy, but we don't want him to do too well if we're Packers fans. The last thing you want is for him to become the permanent head coach of that team.
This speaks to the conversation we had a little bit ago. It's like Rodgers could just make this, in this case, Philbin look great for the next few weeks, and then all of a sudden he gets a long-term deal.
Wow, this Philbin guy's a genius. Rodgers is throwing the ball all over the field. you don't want to see that if you're a Green Bay Packers fan.
All right, my man. Well, good luck to you, and we'll see how it all shakes out. I'm gonna hold off on the Monday night game. That will be a tweet pick on Monday. I have a feeling this might come down my way. I'm going to get off the 3.5 maybe.
Should be a very good Monday night game.
I'll be laying the number. Let's just put it this way. I think Minnesota is soft, and I think Kirk Cousins is soft. I'll be laying the 3.5.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins.
Ooh, that's right.
I'm with you on Kirk Cousins. People ask me, like, what do I think the problem is with Minnesota? Well, it's Kirk Cousins is just not that good. And we talked about it in the offseason. Even if you think Kirk Cousins is better than Case Keenum, which he very well may be, he was never going to perform at the level that Keenum performed at last year. So you had to know going in that Minnesota was not going to get the same level of quarterback play they had in 2017.
Right. They have a guy who in the past has played better and who has a better name, but in terms of the actual performance on the field, Keenum did as well as anyone could have last year. So there was going to be some regression there. Now, they didn't have to win a million games like they did last year. I think it was, what, they go 14-2? But nonetheless, I just think this Minnesota team, you know, they're a dome team. Cousins just looked uncomfortable the entire time last week, and I just think on Monday night, bright lights, give me Russell Wilson in the big stage.
Minnesota has really hitched their wagon to Cousins now because they've got a lot of good players on defense. They've got maybe the best pair of wide receivers in the NFL in Thielen and Diggs, but now they've committed to paying all this money to Kirk for pretty much the duration of this particular core group's time together. So it's Kirk Cousins or bust for the Vikings if they're ever going to get to the Super Bowl. And
they don't run the ball. They don't give it to Dalvin Cook.
I don't believe that Kirk Cousins is the guy. I don't see him getting this organization to a Super Bowl.
I don't either. I do not either as well. Okay, dude. Well, thanks for the early slot this week. One podcast, we had to give our loyal listeners something on a Wednesday. We couldn't let them wait till Thursday.
No. We already have to wait all the way till Thursday for the great Jacksonville, Tennessee game. So we should give the listeners a day early.
I might be on Tennessee in that game. So Twitter, check it. Stay tuned on Twitter. I might be on the Titans there.
I thought you were going to be on the Chiefs. Chiefs, a 6.5-point favorite, probably the best of the morning games. Kansas City hosting Baltimore.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm actually thinking about the Steelers, but
Steelers. Let me say this about the Steelers. It's a sandwich spot for them. They had that big Sunday night game. Now they need the win coming off that loss.
Well,
they've got that New England game looming next week.
Well, it's not going to mean anything if they don't go in beatdown mode next week.
Yeah. So. Ah, true.
But it's a big number. I was hoping it'd be like at Pittsburgh. I'd rather lay 14, you know, that kind of situation. But
the Raiders are frisky. They came through for us big time on Sunday.
What, 4 covers this year? I don't know if they're quite frisky just yet.
Kansas City is a team that when they play these far inferior opponents, I should say, they really seem to take their foot off the gas and just kind of go through the motions. And that was the impression I got from Kansas City this past week.
That's why I'm not taking the Chiefs in the bonanza. You hit the nail on the head there for my thought process.
Fair enough.
All right, dude, until next week.
Yep, I'll talk to you guys later.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
A lot of action there, and we'll have a lot more action on Twitter, I would imagine. But the aforementioned King of Props coming up next. Mike Clay will join us, but first, a word from one of our sponsors.
Talk nerdy to me.
He's back, Mike Clay in studio here, and we had a nail-biting finish on Sunday night, right? It was right there on the number, and that was a bad beat loss with the over-under of passing yards of Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, we did. I think he had 299. The line was, what, 297.5 or something? That's been the theme of the year, right? Like, these just insanely close calls, and they all go against us. Like we.
And your projections have been pretty spot on. So earlier in the year, you were giving us, like, what, 5-6 prop bets going into the weekend. Now we're at 3.
Yeah, I think we're going to ramp it up a little today. I think we have 4 or 5 here. But, yeah, the past couple of weeks, the lines coming in have been really close. I don't want to say they're peeking at my projections or anything out there.
You have a nice firewall on your laptop?
I might need to work it. Well, they're out there. They're public, of course, at ESPN.com. You've heard of that site.
But I have, but the props come out earlier.
No, not the projections. No, projections are certainly out first. Yes.
When do your projections come out?
The initial ones, I mean, you can actually get them Monday night if you work the link the right way. I just have to change the week number in there, but they officially come out Tuesday morning once the league turns over.
Nerd alert!
Yeah, nerd alert. Wow, look at you on top of your stuff.
I mean, technically, I have week 17 projections already. I have them year-round pretty much for the whole season. Mm. So you just tweak them every week based on news, injuries, that kind of stuff. So.
Wow. So,
always evolving.
Yeah.
Speaking of
I like the cheat sheet just having you on here rather than having to like sift through it all. But you've been doing, obviously not the largest sample size, but you've been better on Thursday nights, right? Just so happens that way.
Yeah, we do one where a feature I write extensively about it for our Thursday night preview on the chalk side at ESPN. We're 9-3 in those this year, 4 in a row now. So we're rolling. I think on this pod, if you add them all up, we're right around 500. So we got to do better. But.
Right, but great on Thursdays.
Yeah, killing it on Thursdays, so maybe we'll focus more on that one.
Just pick like 9 props on Thursday.
You know, the feed will just cut out after the Thursday game. We'll just doesn't work anymore.
Okay, well, you know what? Probably the only person who's breaking down a Cody Kessler prop, just not the sexiest prop bet, but hey, all tickets cash the same, and you like a Kessler prop on this Thursday night matchup.
No question. I think what made me nervous about going over on 18.5 completions was the potential benching. You know, I mean, what happens if he's really struggling and they're like, all right, we're throwing Bortles back in there. You know, it's possible.
That's true.
There's a risk of that. He's played a lot of partial games in his career, but it's minus 110, 18.5 completions. I'm going to go with the over. A lot of reasons for this, even against Tennessee here. He's very conservative. 5.5 average depth of throw this year is one of the lowest you'll see. He makes Alex Smith look like Tim Tebow, right? That's crazy conservative. Very high completion passer. You look at his two games so far this season, he completed 21 passes against Houston, and that was in relief. He came in for Blake Bortles in that game last week, 18 completions in a 6-0 game, completed 3/4 of his passes. So he was very close in that one. You look back at his career, 5 games, he's played at least 80% of the snaps. He's completed 18 plus in every one of those games last year, 2016, completed 21, 28, 26, and 19. You look at the Titans defense here. 21.1 completions per game allowed. They've been over this 18 mark in 10 of 12 games. The only exceptions, Josh Allen and Josh McCown last week. So I have him at 21. I think he'll clear 20.
What does your game script have? Because the over-under in this game is 37.5, and anytime there's an over-under in the 30s, that's low.
Yeah, I have it at 36. I have Tennessee 21, Jacksonville 15, so I'm pretty close to that number. I think it'll be a competitive game. Jacksonville plays good defense. Tennessee's defense has been, in terms of points allowed, has been outstanding this season, so I do expect a low-scoring game. But with it being competitive and with me having Tennessee, you know, -6, I think that means Jacksonville's playing from behind. That's going to mean throwing the football. Okay. They'll try to run it as much as they can, but listen, if you're there's nothing more important in the second half than the scoreboard. That's really all that matters when it comes to passing and running.
Well, there's some NFL coaches throughout the course of the season would argue because they've been kicking field goals down 15 with 5 minutes to go and things like that.
That's true. That's true. But they're still throwing it. They're still throwing it.
All right, Sunday night. Little bit more intriguing matchup, just a touch.
Tiny bit.
Rams
at the Bears at Soldier Field, and you like a high-scoring game here.
I do, 28-27 Rams on the road. A few weeks ago, I actually had Chicago slightly ahead in this one, but it has changed based on the nature of these teams over the past few weeks, and it looks like it just was announced Mitch is going to play in this game. So that's
you're on
important.
First-name basis. I didn't know
that. Yeah, Mitch, we're pals.
Yeah, okay.
I call him Mitch, not even Mitchell.
What about Mitchapalooza?
No, just Mitch. Just we're Mitch. Boys, so
All right.
I do not know Mitch Trubisky, so that's totally made up. But yeah, I'm going over on that offense with him in there. 24.5 points is the line here, -110. I have them at 27, so I think they'll beat that. A few reasons for this. They're at home. They're averaging 31 points per game flat at home this season. With Mitch under center, the past seven games he played, 3.7 touchdowns per game. That's big time. I mean, that's up there with some of the best offenses in the NFL, so they were red hot. You look at the Rams' defense. They have Talib back now. Obviously, up front, they're outstanding, but they have some voids in that unit, not to mention that they're always competitive because they're scoring so much, teams have to try and keep up with them. They're allowing 27.1 per game and 3+ touchdowns allowed 7 of their past 10 games. So it's a defense you could score on, and the Rams are playing on the road here. Chicago's been scoring a lot. They're set up to put up some points in this one.
So over Trubisky, 1.5 passing touchdowns.
Yep, that one too.
As well. So you expect a big game for Mitch, your buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, this one's -130, but again, I kind of laid some of this out. They've been scoring a ton of touchdowns when he's been under center. So 1.5, I mean, that's not, I know it's only -130, but that's still attractive to me. He has 2+ in 5 of his past 7 games. And Doug, the exceptions, Buffalo and Minnesota. You know, I mean, those were two very good defenses, and they were the only two. He didn't get
a lot of this
plus.
Is Matt Nagy, too. I mean, he's an offensive, I don't want to say genius, wizard, whatever we say, but guru, and it had shown this year with Trubisky's numbers.
Yeah, Andy Reid coaching tree there, and it certainly has panned out. We've seen that from several guys coming off that tree, from Doug Peterson last season, what he did with that offense, and Frank Reich to an extent under him, under Peterson. You know, they've been finding ways to score points in the league the past, decade now in the NFL. But even the Rams defense, 2+ passing touchdowns allowed in 7 of 12 games this season. They've allowed 14 passing touchdowns their past 4 games, and this is the one, I know you'll like this one. 76% of the touchdowns scored against the Rams this season have been passes. That's fourth highest in the entire NFL. So a lot of reasons to like this one, Mitch, on the over. Again, you're not getting a huge return at the -130 here, but I think he's going to be hard-pressed to fall to 0 or 1.
Monday night, another good matchup. I talked about it with Murray a little bit ago. I like Seattle. I don't trust the Vikings in this situation. They've just been shaky on the road against good teams. And I don't trust Cousins here, and you have under with Adam Thielen.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this game. I'll tell you what, Seattle, they feel, I don't, fraudulence maybe not the word, but there's pieces to that. The roster's not very good.
No.
They have found ways with scheme and Russell Wilson and an insanely high efficient passing game to win games. And I don't know. I don't know if they're going to get exposed at some point or they can keep this going, but that said, I still have them winning.
Right,
25-21.
That's your final score, 25-21 Seattle.
Yeah, they may make me nervous, but I still do have the edge there. Adam Thielen, the reason I have him, there's a few reasons I have the under here, 94.5 at -110. I have him at 88 yards, so it is close. But his target share is down, and his yardage is down in recent weeks. 13 targets per game, 117 receiving yards per game from weeks 1 to 7. He's down to 9 targets and 69 yards per game over his past 5 games. So that's well below this 94.5 number, 69 yards.
But he catches seemingly everything.
He does. He does. He's obviously super efficient. But again, there's nothing more important than volume, especially when you're trying to determine receiving yards. And, you know, that's been down as of late. Not to mention, here's another aspect to it. Seattle's weak spot in terms of pass defense is the perimeter. It's their outside corners with Shaq Griffin and Trey Flowers. They're not particularly good.
Okay.
Teams have been attacking that spot. Adam Thielen primarily plays the slot, so he's going to be inside against Justin Coleman. That's the strength of their cornerback unit. So the better matchup digs on the outside. I think Minnesota tries to attack that. So it's another aspect to it. You look a little deeper at the Seahawks defense. Offense is averaging 60 plays per game against them. That's third fewest in the league, so that's going to limit your volume a little bit. And receivers against them averaging .164 in terms of receiving yards per game. That's 17th in the NFL, so it's still, you know, around mid-pack. So a lot going on here. You know, I hate to bet against Adam Thielen because he's so good. But with the volume going down and in this game, that's probably going to be a low-volume game, I think there's reasons to lean toward the under.
94.5 is a big number. It's not like it's in the 70s or something like that. Proceed with caution, though, again, here with Russell Wilson on an under.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to go under with Wilson because they're the run heaviest team in the league. Yeah,
I know, but he always throwing these miraculous plays at the end. He's got these 50-yard scrambles and then 50-yard bombs to a guy backpedaling wide open in the end zone.
Which I can't understand. Yeah. I mean, like Tyler Lockett is just breaking math.
There's always a guy backpedaling, catching it on the goal line, wide open.
Wide open.
Because he scrambled around three times, and there's across the field, and there's a guy sitting there on the goal line.
That's what I mean about scheme. I don't know how they do it. It's just, it's absurd what they're doing. But anyway, the line is 238.5 passing yards here at -110. I'm at 220. So not a massive gap, but again, he's been under 238 in 9 of 12 games this season. So you talk about those big plays, he's still not getting there. He's still not getting to this mark, 9 of 12. And this is against Minnesota.
Yeah.
This is a good defense. So average 226 this season. That was actually boosted pretty substantially by that 339 he put up against Carolina. Otherwise, he's been well below this mark most weeks. The Seahawks, as mentioned, dead last with 326 pass attempts. And in fact, the Vikings, you look at them, 389 pass attempts against them. That is sixth lowest in the NFL. So we should fully expect a low volume game for Russell Wilson. It's kind of easy to lean towards the under here. The only way I think you pivot away from this one is if you're not buying into our expectation that Seattle wins this game by a few points. If you think, you know what, Minnesota's a better team on paper, which I think if you're going like 1-53, they are clearly better. But there are reasons to think Seattle, with their quarterback situation, offensive efficiency, playing at home, that they'll win this game. If you disagree with us on that, you know, maybe you stay away from this one.
I have a plot to scheme here.
Okay.
I think when you do your projections next week on like a quarterback for the Thursday night game or Sunday night, just throw it like 310.
Yeah.
Whoever it is, see what happens to the
see if
numbers.
It shows up that
see
way.
See if the Superbook is copying you.
Let's
plant a trap.
Yeah, we plant a trap. Listen, we say that in fun. There are always a handful that aren't close, so we're like, okay, maybe not, you know, but suspicious.
And there's, I'm sure, people in the industry that are copying you to a certain extent. Like, there's plagiarism everywhere.
No comment.
I've talked through a few betting picks with Phil Steele that I use on Sunday morning, on Saturday. But, you can't just, like, pick and pop, so to speak.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. But this all – and I get accused of that, too, whenever I post my projected scores every week. Like, when I have a system that computes player projections for everybody. We're talking fullbacks, defensive players, punters. And then I add it all up, and I get a score for every game every week. And you can – that's what powers the fantasy game, all that stuff. So I'll post them scores on Twitter, and people are like, these are way too close to Vegas or too conservative. You're just copying the lines. That's a compliment.
Yeah.
To have a system built like that spits them out that close. I mean, you're just complimenting me. You think you're offending me. You're complimenting me.
Yeah, I mean, think about all the college football games every Saturday. FPI highlights the differences between Vegas. There's only like three different ones that are more than 5 points.
I'm the same way. There's always a few. Like, I don't like that, honestly. When I spit them out and they're so close, I'm like, that's unfortunate. You want ones that are different because you're like, whoa, I can take advantage of this, right? That's what we're looking for. And Doug, that's what we kind of lay out here. That's why we only pick four or five a week.
Yeah. No, this is good. This is good. Buddy, we always appreciate your insight.
Always
good
fun
to get us back on schedule here. I know we were moving parts here with the Thanksgiving holiday and everything else going on. So good.
Well,
to
luckily, there's no big holidays coming up.
Yeah,
so
exactly. We'll be fine. All right, bud. King of props, Mike Clay.
Talk nerdy to me.
All right. Thanks to John Murray and Mike Clay, as always. Kai, any confessions of a non-gambler for this podcast?
The term hedge came up a lot, and I'm pretty sure I have a great understanding of what it is. But if you could just go into maybe an example of what it is to hedge your bet.
Oh, it's very similar to what you were doing as a young man dating, Kai. You had a bunch of females' perspective, right? You weren't just choosing one. No. All right. So basically, it's if you have -3 and you can get out of the bet at +7. You are hedging your bet and with a chance at the middle.
Right. Okay.
So you're hedging your bets. Just like you did back in the dating circles.
Oh, well, you know, I was hedging a lot.
Yeah. How old were you when you got married?
I was 30.
Okay.
31. Sorry. 31.
Okay. So I thought you were like at 25 or something. That's what I was like making fun. You know, I was like saying you weren't doing that because you were a good man, get married young, family man, unlike us bachelors, Murray and I.
Hey, man. Trying to lead the example for the older guys.
I know. Someone's got to be the mature one around here. Okay, so that does it for this pod. Look, we already have a couple on the schedule next week, so we're going to do college and NFL. We'll have Phil Steele back on next week, break down the early bowl games. I know Stanford, Steve, and the Bear have stuff planned as well under their umbrella. We'll also have NFL, obviously, next week. Phil Steele did pass along one play I mentioned in the open, worthy of mentioning again, Army-Navy this Saturday.
12 straight unders in that game. So if you're like a trend, if you're a trend guy and you like that, I mean, look, the logic's there. Both teams run the ball. Both teams are familiar with the other team. Clock moving, blah, blah, blah. I think I'm going to open up with the first half under, see what happens, and then double up if I have to. I like the first half under more than I like the game under. But the trend is 12 straight unders for the game, the Army-Navy game. So thanks to everyone for their loyal listening. Download, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. So we appreciate everyone's loyalty. It's been a fun year, and let's keep it going into next week when we are back on the schedule with two podcasts.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.